Welcome to Q&A with TNK. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A
with TNK.
I'm Tiffany.
I'm Kristen.
Welcome. Welcome back.
Welcome. Tiffany and I are like super giddy because we haven't, the last time we podcasted together, we were together in person and we haven't even like seen each other or anything since.
We've talked. We didn't go radio silent.
Yeah. But we haven't like, yeah. So I teared up a little bit when I pulled her up on my Skype today because I was so excited to see her.
Oh. I just laughed a lot because Kristen's husband was doing a silly dance in the background the whole time. It was great.
Oh, so funny.
So funny.
All right. What are we covering today?
Our question today comes from me because I'm a host of the show, so I get to do that sometimes.
Yeah.
So Tiffany from Portland, Oregon asks, tell us about a recent conference you attended and how it may have changed your life. Kristen.
Okay. Oh, yes. So, it's been about 2 weeks, maybe three. I can't remember exactly. I decided to go to Canada, to Calgary, Canada, to a forest school practitioners course. So, the forest school practitioners course was put on by the Forest School Alliance. I think that's what it's called, in Canada, along with, like, Canada. Oh, I should probably have my binder here so that I can look up all of these organizations that put this on because I'm not giving them due credit.
Do you want to go get your binder?
My binder is at preschool, so I don't have it.
That's cool.
Okay. So I went to Calgary, Canada, and the course was 5 days long, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and I was really leery about going because I've never been away from my kids for that long. But I did it. And I'm so glad that I did because it was an amazing experience. It was like summer camp for teachers.
Ooh.
It was so awesome.
Yeah.
We stayed in like rustic cabins and we slept on bunk beds. And I found out like how really old I am because I was like an old lady on the bunk beds, like, oh, this is so not cushiony. And I ended up having to steal an extra mattress so that I could sleep better. And I had to sleep in with like earplugs in my ears because, you know, there
Nature's
was like five
loud.
People. Well, it wasn't. It was like five girls in one room. And that's just not normal. I mean, I sleep with lots of kids and my husband in my room, but it was just different sleeping. But
were you
it was
a top bunk
fun.
Or a bottom bunk?
I was bottom. Okay, so Forest School Canada is the organization that puts on these Forest School Practitioners course. So the course is 5 days of intensive training in person and on site. And we created our own little forest school set up in the woods. And so it starts with 5 days of intensive training and then it's a year's worth of coursework once you leave.
Wow.
So when it's all said and done, I will be a certified forest school practitioner.
Woo.
In Canada.
No.
In the United States. However,
is that a thing in the United States though?
No, it's really not. I think that looking into it, Cedar Song Nature Kindergarten is the only place in the United States that offers something. And it's not even similar. It's way different. But the Forest School Canada's Forest School Practitioner course is very much structured like the forest school in the UK. So the training that you would go through in the UK, that is how it is structured, except I think there's like three or four levels in the UK of forest school practitioner, but the one in Canada rolls it all together. So the equivalent of training is like the level four certification in the UK. So I think that like Forest School Canada is trying to be more international. Mm. So I was actually one of the first from the United States. Another gal and I awesome. From New Mexico. Her name is Sally. Ooh, yeah. She's awesome. We were the only two from the United States there, and we were the first from the United States wow. that went. Yeah.
That's so cool.
I know.
You're a national representative.
Cool. I know. And while we were there, like I totally plugged our show, and they even gave us some good questions.
Ooh.
But
to hear them.
The cool thing is like names that I threw out of big, you know, EC people, they all know who they are. And it was so cool.
That's awesome.
It was so super so cool. fun. So I don't even know where to start. I should have brought my binder home just so that I could have looked through it. I probably could look through like my notes because I'm a note taker. Like I use a notebook for a certain amount of time until it fills up, and then I start a new notebook. And I don't really label like where the notes, I don't label. So like forest school notes are in here, and then it'll start just being random notes after that. Like, you know, just here's what I have to do today notes. So everything yeah. is all mixed in. But I got a new notebook for forest school practitioners course. So it's at the beginning.
This is how I know that we're soulmates, because I note take the same way. And I'm also an obsessive note taker. Yeah.
Oh, funny. Yeah. So we started out the course. They brought in we would call them a Native American, but in Canada, they do not call them Native Americans.
First
they
peoples? Them,
yeah. First Nation.
First Nation. Yeah.
Some are called First Nation, but they actually don't like that anymore. And they just want to be called natives. That's what this native told us. So he was an elder, and he was amazing. And I think the biggest takeaway from him is that he stated that all power moves in a circle. Mm-hmm. So if you think of life as like a giant circle, mm-hmm. You start in the east in the spring as an infant, and then you travel down to the south, and that's your youth. That's kind of like the season of summer. And then you travel to the west as an adult. And that's the fall. And then the north is the winter, and that's when you're elderly. And so that is kind of like the circle of life. Everything moves in a circle. Everything with power moves in a circle. So a tornado, a hurricane, the sun, the earth travels in a circle, the sun, you know. And so I think that was huge for me. And he actually played a cording flute while we were there, and I actually started crying while he was playing this flute, because it's just so cool to see somebody he can just let go. He doesn't care what people think, and he played that flute with all his heart, and he had his eyes closed, and the music was just flowing through him, and it was really cool.
That's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And then I don't know, have you ever been to a powwow?
I don't think so. I mean, they had the artificial ones at school every once in a while. You know, as a kid, you know, they bring in.
Yeah, that's not the same. You need to
that's not the same. Yeah, that's not a real powwow.
My dad took me to a powwow a few years ago, actually, with my kids. It was really cool. But I didn't know anything about it at the time. But when they do the dancing, they dance in a circle. And they play the drums. And the drums is like the earth's heartbeat. And so that's why they dance to the drums, because it's the heartbeat of the earth. So that was kind of cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we started off with that, and then we moved into the forest, and we picked our location. So that's one thing that's very important when you're looking for a forest school site, is to pick the perfect spot. Pick the spot that best suits your group's needs, and it could be different from group to group. If you run multiple groups, it could be different for one group versus another group. And I think the thing that I didn't realize is that you want to leave as little of a footprint as possible. So you actually change your forest school location like every year or two to a different location, so that the forest growth has a time to regrow from you tromping on it for a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense.
It does make a lot of sense. And so many forest schools in Canada, whether it be kind of like a forest daycare, forest program, or forest preschool, or forest kindergarten, many of them take place in public parks.
Mm.
I didn't realize that.
You can go from park to park to park.
Yeah. And they utilize, they make connections with organizations and different places so that they can run their forest schools in different areas. Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is. It was really cool.
It sounds exhausting too, from the perspective of having to change where you do everything.
Right.
I'm such a nester.
I know.
But it's just such a different type of education that you don't nest.
It is. And the other thing that they pointed out too is that you want to form a deep connection with that space. And so for forest school, you don't visit one place and then the next day go somewhere else and the next day go somewhere else. You pick a spot and that is where you frequent all year. That spot can be comprised of many different spots. It can be, one of the Ottawa Forest and Nature School I can't remember what they get, the something Rocky Mossy Place. So, and then the kids name the spaces within the forest. And mm-hmm. so it could be the Muddy Creek Bed or it could be the Icy Slope. And so there's different areas within your forest school, but you always have like a kind of like a base camp where your fire pit is or your tables or like if you have a shelter, that's where your shelter would be. Or if you created your own tarp shelters, that's where they kind of that central location.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hike out from there to the other locations.
Cool.
Yeah. So we found our spot. We all decided on a group where it was going to be. And it was just in the kind of deep in the woods. And there was a space, just a really good space for a group of, I think we had about 24 educators there. And they came, like, Canada is such a diverse place. It is really cool. So there was a gal there that used to live in South Africa. And she moved to Canada, her and her husband. She grew up in South Africa. Her husband grew up there. Great accents. Oh, my gosh. Her accent was so awesome. Loved talking to her. Her name was Beverly. And just hearing her stories, like, we'd be walking through the forest and she'd kind of look back and she'd be like, oh, I had to kind of remind myself that there's no green mambas in here. Poisonous snakes.
Yeah.
Like, she is so, like, it's ingrained in her that you don't go walking through the bush like that.
Yeah.
You just don't because there's poisonous snakes everywhere. And so it was just fun hearing her experiences. The reason that they moved to Canada is because Johannesburg is horrible for crime. And that is why they moved, because they weren't safe. And she and her husband just decided that they were done feeling unsafe. So they moved to Canada.
Wow.
And she said it's completely different. And she says it's amazing. So it was really cool hearing from her. And then just there was another woman who, I think she lived in Germany. Her name was Susie. And she's just been all over the world. Many of the people in Canada travel all over the world. Like, they're so well traveled. I was like, I've only been to Mexico and some states. It was like my first trip to Canada. They called me Minnesota the whole time. It was just really fun. It was fun. They loved my accent, even though it's not that much different than theirs. And their accent was awesome. I love their accent. I met such amazing people. It was so much fun. So, yeah, we found our base camp and then kind of just dug into things. So we talked about having invisible boundaries. That was a big thing. I think that was one of my biggest questions going into it is like, how do you tell kids where to stop? So we kind of looked to see like they kind of give us some tools on how to figure out how to communicate with children where the boundaries are. And that can be like tying flagging tape around trees so they, you know not to go past this tree, and kind of go walking through the forest with the kids to show them. And you're supposed to keep your boundaries smaller at the start, and then they can gradually get bigger as you learn the children and learn that trust is there. Mm-hmm. Also, they said to carry, as a forest school educator, to wear a bright jacket. So I have a bright orange Patagonia jacket already. And they said that's the perfect thing, because they can always see you. They can look up and see you through the trees and know where you are. But they also said to keep a bright, like your first aid backpack. Just make sure it's like a bright color and hang it on a tree. And then if they can see that, then they know they're okay. They're in the boundaries. So... that was a really cool tool. One thing that they had said was, before going into the forest, the magic line. So you put put a stick down and say, and then you kind of go over kind of the safety things for the day and say, I noticed when I was walking through this morning that there was a tree down across the path. So we're going to take a little bit of a gander around it. If you feel comfortable, go over it. But just kind of make sure that you feel safe. And so kind of talking through kids with things with the children before they're able to cross that magic line, which is just a stick laid down on the front of the path so they know not to cross over that stick. And then once they've agreed to that and they've been listening and you know that they have, then they're free to cross the magic line and head into the forest camp. So,
amazing.
Yeah. What else did I learn? There's so much. I bet I could talk for hours. I think the other biggest thing for me was risk. Like, you see pictures. I don't know if you're like me and you like all these Facebook pages of all these awesome forest schools in Canada or just around the world. And you're like, whoa, they're like at a campfire. How is that like legal? How is that safe? How are they doing that? For me, I don't have the type of a brain that can sit back and think about, okay, how can I get this to be a safe situation? So I actually need somebody to tell me how to do that. Like, I need somebody to tell me how they've done it so that I can know exactly what works and what doesn't.
Yeah.
So for me, that was the biggest, like, there's in our program coursework, there is probably like 5 or 6 different risk assessment tools. And there, so you do risk assessment at the beginning of every single season.
Okay.
So when the weather changes, you do a risk assessment based on the weather. So you have to go out every day before forest school, before the kids even come, and you have to go out and you have to assess the site for any risks that are there. Anything new that may have popped up overnight, or trees that have fallen down, or ice that might be on the path, or if it rained really hard and washed out your path and there's now exposed roots of trees, like to be able to see all of those things and kind of make a plan as to how you're going to handle those different risks that are there. I just learned some really good things about fire with children and how you can keep it safe. Also with tool use, we did a whole entire afternoon on tool use and how so you basically set up what's called the bloody zone. And so it's like this area, you actually mark it off, and that only a teacher and a child are allowed in that space at any time. And that is called the bloody zone. And so when you're using a tool with a child, you are there 100% of the time, 100% focused on them.
That's
and
awesome.
You know, you have to, let the other instructor that's with you or the other teacher know that I'm in the bloody space right now. I'm in the bloody zone. So you need to make sure you've got everything else, because I'm only focused on this child at this time. So we learned appropriate tool use, and we learned how to whittle.
Ooh, I'm so jealous.
Oh my gosh, it was so cool.
What kind do they have, like, knife recommendations? And
how
do you teach a kid to do that? How old a kid do you teach to do that?
They were saying you can 3-4 years old. Yes.
My wide eyes are not conveyed over airwaves. That's awesome.
Yes. Ooh. And so just they taught us how to appropriately work with the child, how to sit kind of behind them, how to teach them to hold the stick, what size of stick to use to start whittling with, kind of that you want, what kind of wood to use to start whittling with, and how to show them how to use the knife to, go away from their body. And it was so cool. So that was really neat. How to use a saw, how to use a hatchet. Like, we learned so much about just even building saw. We learned how to build saw horses from wood that we find laying around the forest floor so that we can anchor our logs for sawing.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing.
It was so cool. So we learned that. We learned about, when you're making the fire. I really wanted to learn more about that. But when we had that discussion, but I shouldn't even say this, but we and the instructors didn't condone it. But we had wine around the fire that was in concealed containers.
Oh, so
nobody knew. So I don't really remember exactly what I took away from the fire building situation. But I still have a lot of support. Like, everybody that was in the course, we're all on our own private Facebook page together. So
that's awesome.
You know, we have that support that I can go and ask that question. Like, how do you, when you're doing fire with children, what kind of things do you have in place for the risk assessment piece? So, yeah.
Amazing.
I know. It was so cool. So, I made a mallet. I used a hatchet and I whittled and made a mallet out of a block of tree.
Wow. So cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
oh,
I have it.
Man.
But I have it. I brought it home.
Amazing.
So,
amazing.
It was amazing. Yeah, so the risk piece is huge. That is one of the biggest parts of being a forest school practitioner is assessing risk and deciding plans of action, kind of leveling that risk from low to moderate to high, and then deciding, do we still go forward with this activity at this risk level, or do we wait for a different day when the weather is maybe different, or a different season when the season is a little bit different? So it's all about assessing risk, like, really broadly, and then bringing it down to, like, each moment, basically, kind of trying to foreshadow, or what would that word be, to foretell what is going to happen?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
To kind of predict what's going to happen, and then have a plan in place for all of those risks that you predict may happen.
Yeah. That is so cool. Would that be your biggest takeaway that you implemented right away? What was your Monday morning like after?
No, that was probably not my biggest takeaway. However, I think that my biggest thing is that, like, in my program, I've always told my employees, like, we're a new program and we're 2 years in and things are going to change. Like, what may have been okay one day may not be the same the next day. And I think that I had some employees kind of getting sick of me having something be okay one day and then having it, 3 months later not be, like, then it be okay. So not be okay at one point, 3 months later it is okay.
Yeah.
And I was getting some pushback from that. And so it was very validating for me that, okay, even though I wasn't writing all this risk assessment stuff down on paper, that's what I was doing in my brain. I just didn't know how to get it across to my employees that, okay, so 3 months ago when it was icy and snowy and cold, we have these humongous electrical spools. 3 months ago, it wasn't okay for them to stand up there and have toys up there, big trucks, because it was icy and slippery and it just wasn't safe.
Yeah, the risk was
so
different.
So springtime comes along and all of a sudden they have toys up there. They've got pots and pans and it's their mud kitchen on top of these spools. And I said, I looked at the situation. It was okay. And I kind of got some, well, it wasn't okay 3 months ago. Well, you know what? It's a different season. Like, I didn't know how to say that. And so I felt really badly. Like, oh my gosh, I'm so wishy-washy. But then I realized, okay, I'm okay in this. Like, I'm assessing risk, even though I didn't have it written down on paper, that that's what I was doing in my brain. And so now I can convey that to my employees and feel a lot better about it. So
do you feel like you would be able to give them the tools to help collaborate with that risk assessment?
Yes, I do. I think that going into the forest, we will use it a lot more because our forest program probably won't be a licensed program. We'll run it as camp so that it doesn't have to be licensed. So it'll be like, you know, you sign up for 10 weeks at a time because in Minnesota, camps are less than 10 weeks and less. It's like a certain amount of hours. So then they just re-sign up every 10 weeks for camp.
I see.
Yeah. So.
Is there a season attached with camp or can you camp year round?
You can camp year round. You can totally camp year round. In Canada.
That is such a loophole. What?
I know.
Whoa. Yeah.
I don't know how that is in all states, but in Minnesota, according to like the child care centers, a camp is, I have all the rules printed off in a folder so that if it ever comes back around, I can say, well, hey, we're a camp. We're running this as a camp. So we don't have to be licensed. Anyway, the other thing that I found out, because I'm like, oh, well, if you're running it as a camp, like, oh my gosh, what about liability? So you have to carry insurance. Like that is one thing that Forest School Canada says you absolutely must carry insurance.
Yeah.
And they help you with that, like figuring out what you need to get. And the other piece is that parents have to sign an informed consent form. So it is not a, what's another term for a form that parents,
not like a registration form?
No, not a registration form. What would be a waiver?
Oh,
yeah. Okay. So it's not a waiver. It's an informed consent form that lets parents know, here is what your child's going to be doing. Here are the risks that are going to be in their daily life here at Forest School. And you are signing this saying that you know this and you are signing them up anyway.
Do you have something like that for your classroom?
I don't.
I don't either. I recently got pushback from my husband. He wasn't actually pushing back. He was just, you know, playing the devil's advocate a bit when we were talking about something about hot glue guns and a kid got burned with a hot glue gun. And he was like, do their parents even know that you let them do these things? Do their parents? Oh, no, that's it wasn't the hot glue gun. It was the Sawzall.
Oh, my gosh.
I wasn't just letting a preschooler use a Sawzall, obviously. Right. I was holding on to it. They were pulling the trigger. I was guiding it. And we were cutting off no more than an inch round branches off of an old Christmas tree.
Oh.
And it was so much fun.
I'm sure.
And like not all the kids wanted to do it. Most of them didn't care. But the four that watched for an hour and got a system of like, okay, now it's your turn. Now it's your turn. Mm-hmm. Now, can we up it to two? Can we do two? Yes. Okay. Now we're going to do two in a row. Who's going to do this big one? Do the big one next. You know, like.
Yeah.
That was so empowering for them.
So do the parents know that you...
Oh, yeah. I immediately was like, we used a power saw. It was awesome. But my husband made the point of, like, is that too big of a decision for you to make without a parent's consent?
Right.
Nothing that was going to happen.
Right.
It's a battery-operated cheap Sawzall. Like, it's not... You know?
Huh. That would be a whole other podcast.
Okay.
You should write that question down that you just asked me.
Okay. Writing it down.
Because I think that's a huge thing to talk about. Because, like, I struggle with that too. Like, okay, do I tell parents at registration that we let them do weapon play here? Do I even bring it up? Or do I wait until it's a problem? Like, a parent says, I don't want my child playing with guns, pretending to play with guns because they're doing it all the time at home and I don't like it. Then do you wait? And then you pull out your research and your until it happens. I mean, it's like, how much do you want to let them know about your program before? I don't know. So that's
and
a touchy one.
So for a forest school, you let them know everything.
Yes. You let them know everything.
Yeah.
And we talked about how one of the men his name, one of the guys, it was only one guy there. His name was Chris. He runs he has a forest preschool, and he's the program director and founder, I believe. And he recently, and we do this at our preschool and have since the beginning because we're such a different philosophy than anywhere anybody in town is used to. He said that he makes parents come to a mandatory meeting with him before they enroll in forest school, and he goes through everything with them. And that's what we already do at our preschool. And I know that's what we would do at forest school too.
Yeah.
So he, yeah, lets them know everything.
And so it seems like that should be the policy for everywhere. Isn't it weird that you and I both have this feeling of like, if the parents know beforehand, they won't even choose us?
Exactly.
Because we trust children so much and the environment that we have set up is so safe.
Exactly.
But a parent picturing it in their own house
would be like, oh my gosh, are you serious? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I struggle. That's something that we should, we should chat about. We need to do a whole podcast on that. Okay. So I want to talk about sit spots. Have you ever heard of the word sit spot?
Yeah. Oh,
I have not. I had no idea what they were even talking about. So when we got there, well, we had to have a safety talk before we crossed the magic line, and that was, there's bears in these woods, and there's cougars in these woods, and so what do you do if you see a bear? And it's get as big as you can, and whoa, bear, and don't look right in the eyes. You kind of look down and down, but you want to keep them in your peripheral vision so you know where they are, and then you back away slowly. So we went through all that, and then never walk without a partner. Like, you always go somewhere in pairs.
Wow.
And then they said, so what about cougars? I was like, shit, you have cougars? Like, you have cougars. Like, what the hell? Where am I? And and so they're like, okay, and Canadians swear a lot too. I don't know if you knew this.
I didn't know that.
So whenever I'm like, I seriously am potty mouth when I
think about forest school.
Yes.
Anytime you go in the woods now, it's just a stream of cursing consciousness.
It is. Then they talked about cougars, and they were like, so what do you do if you come across a cougar? And somebody's like, well, if you come across a cougar, like, you're going to surprise it. That hardly ever happens. If you come across a cougar, chances are it's been tracking you for a mile up high in the trees. And it's going to attack you from behind and kill you. And basically, you're like, SOL.
Yep.
I was like, are you kidding me? And like, my face was like wide eyes, jaw dropped. Are you freaking kidding me? Like, oh my God. And I was like, and I even said it. I was like, are you like, for real? There's cougars and they could just like drop on me? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, oh my God, what are you people doing with me in these woods? So then, I'm not kidding, like 15 minutes after this conversation, they're like, okay, so we're going to go find sit spots. And I was like, what is a sit spot? And so they explain a sit spot. You know, it's just a place that you go that, and usually the sit spot chooses you. You don't choose the sit spot. And you go and you find the sit spot. And with children, you would have them sit in their sit spot for like 2 minutes to start. And it's just like, it's like a calm time, like a collecting, you can like, well, as an adult, I whittled there, but not until like day three, because I didn't know how to whittle till day three, but, or four, maybe it was day four. So we had to go to our sit spots, and it was like 15 minutes. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go find my sit spot. And so I walked and walked and walked a little ways, and no, I was like, okay, I'll sit here. And I was like, oh, this is choosing me. And I sat down. It was sunny and there was birds chirping and everything was quiet. All of a sudden I was like, shit, there's cougars in these trees.
Oh, no.
So I started like having an anxiety attack. I was like looking up in the trees like, oh my God, what the hell? The cougars are going to get me. They just told me not to go anywhere without a partner. And here they made me go and find a sit spot. And the sit spot chose me. And I'm all by myself. And there's nobody around. And the cougars are going to get me. And then somebody, like, I heard twigs snapping. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's coming. And then a girl walks by. And I was like, oh, her name was Sinead. And I was like, oh, good, the cougar's going to get Sinead before it'll get me. And I calmed down for like 5 minutes and I was like, okay, I can do this. And I was like, okay, there's mm-hmm. no cougars. I'm mm-hmm. fine. And then it was just like panic again. I was like, oh my God, there's cougars in these trees. It was horrible. It was a horrible 15 minutes for me. So then I was like freaking out too, thinking, okay, is my sit spot too far away? Am I not going to hear the wolf call when they, because they like howl when it's time to reconvene or hoot like an owl and to come back to base camp. And I was like, how long is this going to be? I don't know how long it is. I don't have a watch on. I have no idea how long I've been sitting here. And there's cougars in these trees. And so finally I did hear the call. So I went back to base camp and we sat down and everybody was quiet. And there's this really cool thing you do with your fingers. It's like you put a veil on basically, like you wiggle your fingers down and everybody puts their fingers down to the ground to be quiet. But then when you get back to the sit spot, the teacher starts her hands low, wiggles her fingers, and then brings her hands high. And once her hands get high, it's basically like the veil is taken off of you and you can talk again. So I was like, oh, after her hands went up. And she's like, all right, let's talk about our sit spots. Let's talk about our experience. And somebody shared, you know, how so glorious for them. And I was like, so I raised my hand and I'm like, I'm just going to tell you how shitty that was for me because that was totally one anxiety ball for me and it was horrible. And so then it was kind of a learning experience from everybody because some people didn't realize, and me either, that a sit spot can be a negative thing for some people. It can be anxiety ridden. Yeah. So how can you change that for those people that you know or those kiddos that you know might be a little bit more anxious? And so the next 4 days, my sit spot was about 2 feet from base camp, just basically facing the other direction. And I had about 4 people in my sights that I could see. And it was so much more glorious after. Aww. I knew I was safe.
That's good. That's
so
cute.
I chose my sit spot the second time. My
yeah,
sit spot
the first time it chose you.
Me. No.
You did not let it choose you again.
Mm-mm. No. So that was a little bit about sit spots. What else? I think the biggest, another big takeaway is just child-led.
Yeah.
Playful learning.
Yeah.
That is what Forest School is. That is all it is. It's child-led. Not all it is. I shouldn't simplify it that much, but because it is very complex. But that's what it basically boiled down to. And I'm like, that is what I do already. And so that was very validating that, you know, that piece will be very easy when I do start like our Forest School program next school year, that's just already ingrained in me. That is just going to be super easy for me. And the observations and the kind of just taking notes and those types of things to document learning. So all of that is just ingrained in me. And so I think it'll be a really good fit for our program.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was really cool. I'm kind of looking through.
What are your last minute thoughts?
My notes. Are we done like already? Well, rope tying. I learned a lot about rope tying.
Ooh. We are at 37 minutes. So maybe.
Holy buckets. Are you serious?
Holy buckets. Yes.
I think the last big takeaway was heart knowledge. Knowledge that so there's different types of knowledge, and heart knowledge is the knowledge that is the most learning. You know that the most learning is happening. That's the things that that to you. I don't know how to explain it. So heart knowledge is just that knowledge that is it basically hits the whole person. So it comes from within and it's intrinsic, and that they called it heart knowledge in the Forest School practitioners course. And I think that was, I really liked that term, heart knowledge.
Yeah.
Then,
and I feel like just you saying the word makes me understand immediately what it is. You just know it in your heart.
You don't know how you know it.
You just know it.
Exactly. It's like hard to explain, but heart knowledge is what we want. That's when the best learning occurs, is when it's heart knowledge. So that was another really big takeaway.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah. And I took, I had a lot of heart knowledge come from Forest School practitioners course.
And so you sent me some pictures and it was beautiful.
Oh my gosh, it was beautiful. We were near Banff. So I actually got to go to Banff twice and hang out there and walk around. It was beautiful. And then five of us went and got our noses pierced the last day. I just got a stud, but I'm super excited because I'm going to go get it switched. I really wanted to do a golden hoop, but you can't get pierced with gold. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So you have to get pierced with.
Wait, you can't get pierced with gold? I got my ears pierced with gold when I was like 10.
Well, I don't know. Ears might be okay, but any other puncture wound, you're not supposed to pierce with gold.
Good to know.
That's what our piercer told us. And it was, yeah. So I wanted to get a hoop, but then my grandma's funeral was like the day after I got home from forest school. And I did not want to go to my grandma's funeral with a hoop in my nose. So I just got a really simple stud. But I'm going to go get a gold hoop soon. I'm really excited.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So before, on con for sure.
Definitely. Hey. Listeners, come to UnCon.
Yes.
Do you know that we still have three spots? How many spots do we have at our house right now?
Oh, yeah, we do. We have three spots left in our house, our condo that we rented.
If you want to join the party.
Yeah. Come and hang out with Q&A with T&K.
Yeah. We got a condo across the street from the Hilton.
Yep.
Super cheap. Seriously, send us a message on Facebook. That's how we do all the things.
Totally. Okay. So should we do a what would you do or not?
If it's fast.
Okay. What would you do if you were in the woods and you saw a cougar?
I would probably just stop. Do you know I've seen one in real life?
You have?
Yeah. There's
like
one that
in
lives
the woods?
There's one that lives by my house. Or seriously? It used to. I don't know if it still hangs around. In the snowy time, you can see the prints.
Creepy. Ooh. They're kind of creepy.
Yeah. I am kind of scared of cougars, but people in our neck of the woods, like old ladies, fight them off with sticks.
Oh.
Like a cougar's coming for you and it bites you and you hit it in the face really hard with a stick. I feel like I'd go for the throat. That's my answer to everything. Throat punch.
Well, I think that throat punch, spider monkey, that bastard.
Ah!
Just wrap yourself around and don't let go.
Yeah. For real though, if I was just walking along and just saw a cougar, I feel like I would just stop and watch it for a second and then maybe try to make the loudest noise I possibly could.
Yeah.
Because if I can scare it first, I think when an animal's scared, it's not going to charge you. It's going to be like, whoa, and run away.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to tell you that there was a girl that I met, Paige, and she's so awesome. She lives just north of like Montana border. And she's amazing. And I love her. We need to have her on as a guest.
Yeah.
Her husband is fire and rescue in Canada. And so that huge fire broke out.
Yeah.
When we were there. And so her husband had to go fight that fire. I mean, he's part of that whole crew. But anyway, she was telling us a whole bunch of stories about things like he does like rescues from grizzly bear attacks and cougar attacks. Like he helps with that. So he sees the aftermath of some of these animals like ravaging on people.
Oh,
creepy.
So creepy.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Anyway.
All right. Kristen.
Well, Tiffany.
It's been fun.
It's been fun.
See you next time on Q&A with
T&K.
Woo!
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall, Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.